shell scripts and real binary programs. They could be made to behave like the same. There are other scripting languages, of course. It's possible to write pure SED scripts. Org, of course, one of the old scripting languages, and then the newer ones, Perl, Python, whatever, which blur the distinction between just script languages and real programming languages, full-featured programming languages. They have to be interpreted, of course, in order to be used like shell scripts. One important thing is this so-called interpreter directive, which could be the first line of a script, and which then leads the exec VE system call in Unix to the correct interpreter for a script. For example, in shell scripts, one would have hash exclamation mark bin bash or something like that in the first line. For Perl script, for example, user bin Perl, and exec VE takes care of calling the interpreter with the script as an argument and additional arguments as well. Let's just check shortly this. This man page. So we have this script starting with the line this form, and that's the interpreter directive. The initial arguments got handed over to the script, along with the file name, which has been called like an ordinary binary file. And that's a means of blurring this distinction between a script and a binary file, because it appears like the same, it's just started from the command line. In the audio world, it's not the same situation. It's not as easily possible to write audio scripts which directly deal with audio, like Perl scripts deal with text, for example. But there are several approaches to do audio scripting. One simple thing would be to just launch a standalone application from inside scripts, which is done in usual shell scripts as well. Usually shell scripts use other tools for doing their tasks, and they just provide the glue to combine them in the good old Unix tradition of having simple tools which could be combined in any way. Another possibility would be to use command line driven audio tools like the sound file programs, which are bundled with the sound file, or very popular, the SOX sound file tool, which could be integrated with a shell script for specialized tasks. And there are audio applications, of course, which has a genuine scripting interface. I will talk about the Kika sound a little bit. The final approach would be to use Foo. Can use Foo programs directly as shell script by using this interpreter directive, and there you can really operate on the audio data with the full power of an audio of a full programming language, of course, and a language which is designed for dealing with audio, so that seamlessly directly in the script, which then behaves like any other program on the system. An easy way to use shell scripts with audio is just to launch other applications, for example PD. You can start PD with several arguments from the command line. You may provide a PD patch which should be loaded on startup, and you even can trigger some initial events which then get the system to run. Another possibility would be to feed an application by a standard, by the Unix standard input. This is possible, for example, with SuperCollider. You can start the language client and directly pipe the SuperCollider program into the language, SuperCollider language, which then gets interpreted and yes, evaluated or executed, whatever. Or another possibility would be to control applications via an API and a wrapper around this API, which then provides means in other scripting languages, as we have seen yesterday with C Sounds, Victor Lazzarini's talk. There's an API, for example, in Tickle, which makes this API available for scripting in the Tickle language. All these approaches have one thing in common. You cannot go directly to the signal processing process. Okay, by feeding a script into SuperCollider, you may produce the script from a shell script and then pipe it into SuperCollider. But the shell script you are writing for doing this mechanism does not directly deal with the audio, so there is not the same level of interaction. And of course, you are bound to the possibilities of the standalone applications, which features either export to the command line interface. Another possibility would be to use command line tools which deal with audio like ordinary Unix tools. This is done the same way as other tasks on Unix, the old school Unix way, so simple tools, as I said before, combined, for example, through pipes. We have atomic operations like, let's say, sound file resample or sound file convert from the lib sound file distribution, or lib sample rate was the other one. And we can execute these in the shell script using some variables and doing quite sophisticated tasks. Another thing would be socks, for example. There's socks. I made socks example for the paper, which is where we are. For example, the DHAM script, which just tries to remove 50 Hertz mains power hum from a sound file. Just as a short example, we have a small command line option parser. The usage message, of course, is missing, but you can specify frequency bandwidth and the file suffix to be set after trying to remove the hum from arguments on the command line. And I think here's a little bug in there, but I forgot which one it was. But it tries to create the output file name and tries to append this suffix in between the file body and the extension. And I guess if you provide an input file name without an extension, this thing gets upset somehow. But it's just an example. And then we call socks with the band reject effect and the parameters for this band reject. This would be an example for using socks in shell script, and I can use the dhum tool then without knowing anything about socks. And of course, we are doing this for loop here, so I can generate a file list to be dehumped before with ordinary Unix tools like find, for example, or ls or whatever, using wildcards. And this would be the pain with just socks on the command line for 1,000 files or so. And apart from that, is trying to remove mains power hums, of course, normally not successful. Okay, the limitations, of course, are we need the tools which provide the desired functionality. We cannot access the audio data directly. We cannot write patches, for example. We have to rely on the features the tools have which we are working with. The functionality is still hard-coded. We cannot access it. And possibly if you use different tools coming from different ages in computer history maybe, or from different developers, we might have to deal with different idiosyncrasies of tools in the script. Once the script is written, of course, it doesn't matter any. Another example for quite sexy way of dealing with Unix and audio is the CAL system, CAL distribution, I think written by I don't know, prenamed by Moore, along the C Music project. And the idea was to just use an arbitrary shell language and to provide tools like unit generators, for example, which are then combined by means of Unix pipes. So the audio data is directly streamed through Unix pipes, which is quite neat. We've got a more or less consistent interface for all the modules, audio in, audio out, through pipes or redirection operators, and of course some options or side chain inputs like this filter program needs the text file providing the filter coefficients. And at the beginning and the end of such a chain, usually there's a from SF, or formerly known as sound in, and at the end we have sound out, or now it's called 2SF. These tools just read sound files and pipe them to the next tool. We can build a processing chain and finally write out the processed data to a sound file again. There's one limitation. We cannot express parallel processing chains with the usual Unix shell languages. That's why there's a special program called PROC, where you can give strings like these, which then build sub-processing chains which are evaluated in parallel, then combined again by the PROC program in between, and then streamed out to the next tool or to the sound file. But this means we have a different level of grammar for specifying this usual monofile chain and parallel processing chains. So it's not as sexy when it comes to parallel processing chains. I think we thought about writing something like an ouch, the audio processing shell also, which allows for specifying parallel chains in a better way, but I get just an idea from yesterday. Another program which provides its own scripting language is Ecasound. We have a scripting language which could be either used via command line options, very sophisticated option set, or we can specify those options in a similar way in a separate file called the chain rules file. Similar to SED, we could provide SED with this script rules through the minus E option, or we could write a separate file with SED rules and feed SED with these. This is just a simple example for the same task. You want to remove 50 Hz in the bandwidth of 6 Hz from the input file and write it to an output file again. And this is a very simple effects processing chain using the band reject filter of Ecasound. Okay, then to the Foo language, which could be used for scripting as well. Foo is a quite old project. It started, development started in 1993 here at ZKM. Both authors, Gerhard Eckel, which is now at the IEM in Graz, and the Spanish composer Ramon González Arroyo, got a got a scholarship or something similar at ZKM during, I think it's 3 months, 93, January to March, and the first version of Foo was written in this time. It's a tool for non-real-time sound synthesis, yet another tool. And it's written originally for the Next Step system, that's why it's written in Objective-C, using the Next Step Foundation library. And it provides some scheme primitives for dealing with audio. So the language in which we use Foo usually is Scheme. And Scheme is classified with a patch construction language. So the patches, once they are built, are completely evaluated or executed in Objective-C. The audio rendering is done in Objective-C without Scheme callbacks. So it might be possible to make it real-time, to fulfill the requirements of a real-time system, but there are better ones, like Superfly, of course. One goal during these years, 93, was to provide high quality audio rendering and not that much performance, as much performance as possible without compromising the audio rendering quality. So I guess Foo was one of the first utilities which implemented the sync interpolator and nothing, no interpolator, no resampling algorithm else. And there's also no control rate. It's, everything's evaluated in audio rate, which makes the architecture quite simple. The tool was used by three of us now. Ramon González Arroyo still composes using this tool until 2003 or something like that, using this Next Cube at home. And in 2003 I started porting this software first to Linux using the GNUSTEP framework, so it's still Objective-C, and in 2004 I managed to get it run on Macintosh using the native Cocoa interface, which is a bit painful sometimes, but fortunately we just use the base foundation of NextStep, not the GUI stuff, so it makes it a bit easier. The tool is available to the SourceForge project site, foo.sf.net. It's a bit outdated, of course, as we see here, and the file releases are even more outdated, so you should use the CVS version, which comes with an auto tools build system now for both Mac OS X and Linux. I think the file regions are still using the GNUSTEP make the build facilities, which are nice if you just use GNUSTEP, but if you want to have a portable project, it's not sufficient. The development is still ongoing. There are several bugs, several known bugs, and but all three of us are not full-time Foo developers, unfortunately. The ways of using Foo, usually you use it as a small tool in interactive mode, just on the terminal, like this, just start Foo, you get a Foo prompt, you can evaluate expressions, for example, like about, which does not any audio processing, but you can construct patches, for example, like this, like let's synthesize the sine wave, the hello world of audio. Two channels, 5 seconds. This is a convenient macro, and which hides a lot of the usual way of doing this. Let's do just one channel. We output in the first channel. And multiply the constant signal of, let's say, .2, or to not make it too loud. Mm-hmm. And then we have this sine wave, which is again modulated by a constant signal of 440 Hz. There's no mistake. Okay. This was a sign of an output synthesis. And I don't know whether my setup is correct, but let's try it. Oh no, I use check play here. Okay. Let's play this. Still too loud. Okay. But you got the idea. Yeah, so this is rendered to a temp file here because we're using this convenient micro normaler. Normally you would use a context in which those patches are contained and then using a task to render a context into a substrate, for example, a sound file. This is some foo terminology. You have signals, which are just streams, and you have substrates, which are with random access, like sound files, you can seek forwards, backwards. And you have the context, which contains a patch, which is not bound to any sample rate or bit depth or whatever. And then you use a task to render a context into a substrate with a specific bit depth, sample rate, whatever. You can find it in the full documentation, or I think the material of my talk 2 years ago should be online somewhere as well. Another way would be to use the Emacs inferior mode, of course. You can write full programs and evaluate them. Start the scheme. Sorry, that's a setting from before. But fortunately, it's not that complicated. Stuff. This thing here. Okay, so we get through here. And could go to. We could evaluate things here as well, of course, or we could use. I could use new scripts and evaluate them in the buffer in this area here, which shows the output from the interpreter. And this way I can work more or less interactively, but I'm writing down while writing expressions like this one again. Now maybe with the dot one, but I'm not going to play it back. And this way it keeps the history, so I can save my daily session then as a file and look at it later or take parts out of it. Of course, foo on the command line has a read line interface with the history which is saved upon leaving, and we've got a top level symbol completion which switches to file completion inside the screen, which I'm quite proud of, that's why I have to show it here. And the third possibility is using a foo script. Maybe I've got it. Here it is. Scripting means I write foo programs which I could evaluate on the command line step by step or interactively like a shell script in a shell. But again, using this interpreter directive as used in normal shell scripts. But in the foo script, then I have the full power of scheme and the maybe not as full power of foo. It's still more powerful than foo. But you can directly write the patch construction like in other synthesis languages, CLM or CSound or whatever. Yes, in the script, you really have access to the audio processing chain without a layer in between, like using shell script for starting other tools, which then get combined in a way like unit generators. So we need this interpreter directive for seamless integration to the Unix environment. We need a means of command line parsing, like the getopts function in C or getopt function. Are there two of them, getopt and getopts in bash script. And we also need to read standard in if we want to provide a way to generate file lists by find or ls and try to standard out as well. I guess, yeah, that's the talk, and now we can do some examples. There were several things to be resolved when making foo scriptable. Here we see a foo script which is a cat for sound files, concatenates several sound files. And this is the interpreter directive. And there's something special about foo to know about the arguments. If I just start foo with, let's say, my spell, these are, I describe these things in more detail in the paper, but these are the options foo understands. And which are handed directly to the scheme interpreter. This is the ELK interpreter, which has some quirks. But there are several loading stages. There is this stage of launching the interpreter, and then control is handed over to the scheme startup process. And there are, again, options to be evaluated. So I have to it's not escape, but this double minus minus, like in other C programs, says end of options. But here we can provide options again. And these are now the help messages from the scheme stage of the startup from foo. It's a bit of a problem, but once you know about it, it's not that hard to get. So I could set, for example, the heap size here for 64 megabytes, and then give another option, for example, this thing to unload the control package in foo. Foo has a package concept of loading different libraries on startup, and sometimes I might want to use these. And maybe even in scripts, you might want to use something like MyTools package, and then you have to provide these initial options here in the script. But then there is a limitation of XFVE I discovered trying this, because, let's go back to this man page, it says the args are handed over to the interpreter, but they are not tokenized. They are handed over as an entire string like this, which then makes the command line parsing a bit painful. So I get this string as a whole, not the separate tokens. I'm not a Unix expert, so I don't know whether this is okay or a bug, or maybe it's like this. XFVE does not parse, does not construct a proper argument vector. So in the startup program of foo, is a bit hacky thing there, which tries to guess whether we have such a situation, then constructs a new argument vector by tokenizing those items here, and then re-executing foo with a proper argument vector in order to make evaluation possible. This was one of the things which have been done to make foo scriptable. Okay, but since that's done now, this is working. Here we see the command line library, which has been written for foo in order to provide a getopt-like way of command line parsing. The script might provide an array of lists or list of lists with the available options. May have several alternative options for the same thing, for example, long ops and short ops, like here, but they are dealt with the same. I can specify some rules. Are these options mandatory or are they optional? do they have parameters or not, and which is the help message for these options. So the command line package may generate a help screen automatically from this information. Then we can use the command line interface, like ask whether a specific option was given on the command line. Does the command line fulfill the requirements which are given there? And now I just can start. The FSCAT script, which could reside in user local bin, of course. And here we get the message command line validate out file options missing, because it is a mandatory option. Up here, yes, the mandatory flag is set, so we need to specify an out file, and then we get the automatically generated help message out of these strings. This should ease writing scripts in Foo. And later on we do the usual business. Most of the stuff in writing more or less fail-safe or dummy user-safe scripts is error handling. We have to check almost everything which the user might have done wrong. Whether there's everything specified, all the files are existing on which we want to operate. Here we guess the file type and from the file extension which was given as a output file option, and so forth. And here's the actual work done. For each channel and for each file, we just copy the data into the output file at the appropriate place. So we have this time macro somewhere. Ah yeah, here we are. This is also interesting about Foo, because it's the only means of dealing with time in Foo. We have the time macro, which shifts the local time origin relatively to the outer time frame. So here the output is the top level time frame, which starts at zero, and this time offset, I might shift the time frame to the specific offset, and if I nest another time inside here, it will behave relatively to this time frame here. And yes, this could be done more compressed, but this is also meant as a documentation example. So finally we just render the task by run task, and then we quit from the script. Let's do it. I've got two files here which I'm going to recreate in the next example, code 8 and code 16, and I may concatenate them to the file forwardcat.buff, let's take it. And if I just use these two files without any other options, we guess the type from the output file name, and we use the sample rate and sample format and the number of channels from the first file name. And as in usual Unix world, if everything goes wrong, it says nothing. And now we've got this... Sorry?
If everything goes wrong.
If nothing goes wrong, the script behaves silent. Yeah, we could use another tool to check whether the length, whether everything is fine, but we can guess it here from the file size. That, yeah, you have to believe in it works. Let's delete this thing now. Another final example is the FS forward script, which could be used to deal experimentally with sound. Gerhard Eckel did one piece using a technique like this. What we are doing is just reading a sound file. It's specifying a number of chunks or parts in which the sound file gets divided, and then just layering the parts over each other. So we just compress it somehow. So we change the meaning of time, let's say. Yeah. For example, the sound soundscape recording, and just layer the different things which happened in time over each other. We may provide a channel count. This version is good, just supports a mono input file, but it can generate a 16 channels output file. Let's do it. This fold shows this help screen again. Output file is fold.wav. I'm dividing the sound file, let's say, in 16 parts, and I'm using 16 channels. And I use a recording from Paris metro trip, half an hour long. And now the sound file is divided into 16 parts. And since we have 16 channels as well, there's just one part per channel in the resulting output file. Let's use this tool. So we've got a 16 channel output file, which is a 16th or 1/16 of the length of the original file. And in this case, we just use a static normalizing functions, but in later versions, I intend to use to separate to normalize the chunks separately, such that parts which were not as loud in the recording are not lost, or could be heard still when overlaid with the louder parts. We don't have a 16 channel system here, so maybe I do the same again with 16 parts, but just two channels. So we get. Okay. I have to use the minus F force flag in order to overwrite the output file. But it's not quite correct that it ends up in the inspector. Should return to the shell. And now we could listen to the original in the beginning. So it's just. Just the metro in Paris for half an hour. It goes on like that. But as we play the result of this process, it's much more dense. Yes, and let's say with 8 channels, with a longer recording, it's complete sound installation already. Okay, thanks.
So, are there any questions? Of course. The usual question comes from the very last row.
Sorry, next time you sit in front. It appears to me, I mean, I don't know anything about FOO, but it appears to me that it's kind of a scheme equivalent of CLM. Is it? Can you say that?
Not quite. CLM existed before, FOO, of course, and Gerhard and Hermann used it before. And I would say the main difference is that you don't have the concept of an instrument. So with CLM you define your instruments with a specific interface, let's say, and then use these instruments more or less equivalent to C sound states statements. And in FOO it's easy to build this concept of instruments, of course, but you don't have to. So there's no other level for there are no two levels of having the instrument and of having a score. So Fug does not have this distinction. You directly write, as you see here, you directly write checking stuff, but here's the work done more or less in the loop for each of the parts. And you directly construct patches which could behave like interfaces. It's easy to just write a function and encapsulate a patch in them, export some of the arguments you want to export, and then you've got like an instrument. But
I say just in the general, mm-hmm. the general sense, not coming out to this detail, but in the general sense of the way it relates to the language scheme. It kind of sits on top of scheme the same way CLM sits on top of Common Lisp.
Maybe a bit. It's related to each other, of course, but I think Foo is much simpler. So the interface Foo provides on the we call it the Foo kernel. The Foo kernel level is much simpler than that of CLM. You just have a certain scheme primitives, and usually you don't compose directly on this level. So Ramon Gonzalez Arguello wrote this control library which does multi-channel expansion matrices for each signal processing entity, and it gets rather complex, but it's possible to write something completely different on top of this level. So there are least as possible assumptions on the things you want to do with it. So there are almost no musical assumptions. There's no means of a note, of a half tone, whatever. You can use functions to do it if you want, but it's not there from the beginning.
Thank you.
Other question? None at all? Okay, then I first have to excuse for being so terribly bad at introducing you in the beginning. I have to admit, I did not really read the paper, so I wasn't sure about food is in the relationship. But now I learned a bit about this. Okay, then thank you very much, Martin. Let you out into the lunch break. We continue by 2 p.m. with Jürgen Reuter on ontological processing of sound resources. It's the last lecture for today, but I ask you not to even think about leaving yet, because it fills a very interesting gap. See you then.
Ja, natürlich. Also von der Chefsfeier ist das auch gut genommen, tatsächlich das Sound anzuarbeiten. Das ist wahrscheinlich dann auch noch nicht im Video. Ja, genau.